This is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of the Mayor-President of East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and we're going to hear from Mark Ballard and then later in the hour from Molly Ryan about what's happening in the Beltway and at the state capitol. And there is much, as Hank Stram would say, the former Saints coach, percolating right now. But the eyes of the world remain on the Manhattan courtroom where Donald John Trump, the 45th American president, is on trial for concealing hush money payments to Stormy Daniels, the former Stephanie Clifford, former Stephanie Gregory, from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, born on St. Patrick's Day of 1979. I was in college then. I didn't know such a historic thing was happening on that Saturday when I was celebrating with some of my good friends at Magoo's on Chime Street. But Stormy Daniels was born that day, and now she is one of the most famous people in the United States of America. And she is the pride of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, with one out of 73 Americans born or living in Louisiana. We generate a lot more than one out of 73 news stories. Today, Mike Johnson, and we'll talk about this with Mark Ballard, he survived a coup in his own ranks to retain his job as Speaker. But looking at the Wall Street Journal yesterday, front page, and there is Mike Johnson standing with Steve Scalise next to the President of the United States, Joe Biden, and the Democratic leader in the House, Akeem Jeffries. So two out of four from Louisiana. And the editor of this newspaper, by the way, the news editor is Alex Martin, who I went to school with at Louisiana State University. So we outpunch our weight when it comes to making news in Louisiana. And despite what happens in New York, even if Mr. Trump is convicted, it is highly likely, almost certainly going to happen, that Donald Trump will win the electoral votes in Louisiana, all eight of them, as he has twice before. In 2016, he received 1,178,638 votes, 58.1% of the votes, and Hillary Clinton got 780,154 in Louisiana, 38.5%. That was the most votes ever for anybody running an office in the state of Louisiana. The turnout was 68%. Compare that to the 35% of those who were eligible to vote, who cast ballots in the October 14th governor's election last year. In 2020, Trump exceeded his record total of votes in Louisiana, receiving 1,255,776 votes in our state. Joe Biden was 856,034, Trump 58.5, Biden 39.9. So another route for Donald Trump in Louisiana, who arguably is the most popular politician to ever be on a ballot in our state. When it comes to total votes, certainly he is, and he's won two landslides for president, and he will set a record in Louisiana by winning a third time by a landslide margin, almost certainly, no matter what happens. He could be convicted, could be a hung jury, doubtful that it will be an acquittal in New York City. But even if he's convicted, he will be appealing and will he be eligible to run and presumably could serve office, worst case scenario, as the leader of the free world from a prison cell somewhere. Doubtful that that will happen either, but it is a fascinating story, and at the center of the firestorm is one Stormy Daniels. And last night, one of her classmates at Scotlandville Magnet sent me a photo, 1997 Stormy graduates. She was the editor of the school newspaper, The Talon, this lady who's now a prominent lawyer who was on that staff with Stormy, remembers her as Stephanie Gregory, and she had red hair then, by the way. She is a natural redhead, and she, of course, has since become a blonde. As we get older, redheads do kind of segue to blondes. I can speak from personal experience. But Donald Trump, it appears, was extremely attracted to her, and knowing she was a pornographic film star. And now he is calling her names and ridiculing her appearance. And here is Nicole Wallace of MSNBC commenting on how Trump actually conspired with aides on how to frame Stormy Daniels as the trial was about to begin in New York City.
I read these things and I'm shocked, but I'm guessing you are not.
I'm not shocked. No, he'll do anything and everything to get what he wants. And women are of no value to him in his life or world. The only one who is, I think, is his daughter. That's it. The rest of the women in the world are useless as the immigrants that he says are coming from, you know, Honduras to take us in caravans. Watch out for the caravan. There are people walking.
All right. That's Rosie O'Donnell commenting. And of course, Trump, at one point when he was in a feud with her, which continues, he was calling her all kinds of names about her weight and saying he'd like to get into her fat pockets. That's an exact quote. It was Stormy Daniels, the name that he was giving Stormy, the former Stephanie Gregory Clifford, who's an attractive person. He was calling her and is calling her bleeping horseface. And that's Donald Trump, who is morbidly obese, no day at the beach himself. You're never going to see a photo with Trump of Trump with his shirt off. Just not going to happen, folks. But it appears he also has this aversion to people named O'Donnell. There was Rosie O'Donnell, and there's Lawrence O'Donnell, who's been hammering away at the former president on MSNBC. And I thought Lawrence O'Donnell, who Trump tweeted, I think it was yesterday, saying that O'Donnell, quote, looked like S-H-I-T. Here's Lawrence O'Donnell commenting on Donald Trump allegedly not using any protection, not having any condom sense in his relationship with Stormy Daniels.
And the very first thing that went through my mind is 60-year-old Donald Trump not wearing a condom with a 27-year-old woman who's from Louisiana, a state where a 27-year-old woman or a woman of any age now cannot get an abortion if they make the mistake of having sex with someone like Donald Trump, who's not using a condom. And the idea that that abortion ban that so many women in this country are living with was inflicted on them by the defendant in this case, described today as not wearing a condom.
All right. And Donald Trump is proud of the fact that he is responsible for Roe v. Wade being overturned. It was Trump who appointed three justices to the court, all of whom voted to overturn it. Amy Coney Barrett of New Orleans, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch. Those were three of the, it was really five when it came down to the final vote. Roberts wasn't going to do it, but there were some other votes in that decision in which the vote was 6-3, but John Roberts is a wise politico himself, and some on the right don't like him because he does, I think, watch what happens with the court of public opinion. And the vote would not have happened if not for those three justices who were nominated and approved by the United States Senate, all of whom were voted yes, up, yes, yes, yes by John Kennedy and by Bill Cassidy. 877-217-5757, Mark Ballard on deck, but Colette in South Baton Rouge, Robin, has been on the line for a little while. I want to slide Colette in. It's always nice to hear from somebody in South Baton Rouge. Hi, Colette.
Hi, Jim. I'm rather appalled that you would call Stormy Daniels the pride of Louisiana. I don't see how a pornographic film star is someone we should be proud of.
Well, I didn't say necessarily that we should be proud of her. I just said she was the pride of Louisiana. There is a distinction there. But why do you find fault with Stormy Daniels? Do you think she's doing the world a public service, or should she go away and hide in a corner?
Well, the reason I called doesn't seem to be what you're paying attention to. She was called the pride of Louisiana. So that would mean that our state is proud of her. And I'm a citizen of Louisiana. I'm not proud of her, and I don't like that distinction.
Okay. Are you proud of Donald Trump?
That has nothing to do with it.
Yes, it has everything to do with it, Colette. I think you're a Trump supporter.
I'm not saying who I support. I'm just saying I have a problem with you calling Stormy Daniels pride of Louisiana.
Well, I would call you the pride of South Baton Rouge, but I understand what you're saying, and maybe that's a bridge too far, but I think that she was called to testify. She comes across as a credible witness, and that she has a story that the American people should hear. Do you share that point of view?
I have no problem with that, but she is not the pride of Louisiana.
Okay. Well, what is your perception of President Trump, Colette? Colette, you made your point more than once, and I understand it, but what is your perception of the former president?
That's not why I'm calling.
I said, what? But I would like to know. Do you think that he is a...
Well, you don't need to know that.
Well, I've called him the pride of Manhattan, the pride of Gotham City, so...
I don't think he's the pride of that either.
All right, fair enough. Thank you, Colette. We'll be back, hear from Mark Ballard and more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is our guest, the man who covers the Beltway. And he, of course, follows what's happening in Baton Rouge and in Manhattan. And those two entities have converged with Stephanie Gregory Clifford, former editor of The Talon, the school newspaper at the great school, Scotlandville Magnet, who now is on the witness stand again today. That's the schedule. In her trial with Donald John Trump, who is accused of concealing hush money payments, $130,000 that was paid to Miss Daniels. 877-217-5757. We will talk about other matters with Mark, and one of those involves another Louisianian, the pride of Benton, Louisiana, Mike Johnson, who on Wednesday batted down an attempt by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene to oust him from his post. The Georgia Republican only got 43 votes. 359-43. Mark, quite a victory for Mike Johnson.
Oh, yeah. It was an easy win for him, and they basically just kind of smothered that in its cradle before they actually had to vote on whether to oust him or not. They voted on whether to table or kill the motion to have a vote to oust him, and so that went down. Everyone in the Louisiana delegation, I guess unsurprisingly, voted for Mike Johnson. And I'm not sure that it's over yet because under the rules of the House, any one member can bring this motion up again. And Marjorie Taylor Greene said that she likely would do that again. So, but for the time being, it looks like he's got a pretty safe position.
And Mike Johnson... Last night I got a message, as I'm sure many others did, from him, basically saying another day at the office, and he seems to be weathering this storm pretty well. And he, of course, is a guy who came from nowhere for this position, but he seems to be growing with the job, Mark.
Yeah, yes, he did. And I mean, it was obvious last night after, he kind of met with the press in Statuary Hall, and it was, he's trying his best not to gloat, but I mean, there was you could tell he was fairly happy at the way this all turned out, because we're talking about there were two things. One is that there were more Republicans voting to support him than there were Democrats, which had been a worry. The fact that it was such an overwhelming vote. So, but one thing to recall though, is that 11 Republicans voted against him, and had the Democrats not gone along, he would be out of a job. So.
And his message to anyone within reading distance, hey everyone, just another Wednesday on Capitol Hill. I want to say that I appreciate the show of confidence from my colleagues to defeat this misguided effort that it certainly was. As I've said from the beginning, and I've made clear here every day, I intend to do my job. I intend to do what I believe to be the right thing, which is what I was elected to do, and let the chips fall where they may. In my view, that is leadership. Members have just voted and made their voices heard on the motion to vacate matter, and now we have important work to do for the country. There are a lot of things to fix. Last week, we announced a house-wide effort to crack down on anti-Semitism on campus. This morning, we introduced legislation to fortify American elections and ensure that only American citizens can vote. And it goes on from there, but there are already laws on the books saying if you're not an American citizen, you can't vote in a presidential election. And I don't know that we've rounded up a lot of, quote, illegals who voted in the 2020 election. He still is an election denier, despite his other moves. And that seems to be a prerequisite for a position in the National Republican Party right now.
It is, from the reports that I've been seeing, is that that is being asked of every single person that is applying for the Trump campaign. They're also vetting lawyers, the lawyers that are just right under the, you know, that are doing the advising in each of the agencies, and they have a big impact on what's being said on how the agency leaders do. And those lawyers are being vetted on that particular issue. You're seeing that the vice presidential candidates are also being vetted on how well that they do. This bill that Johnson started pushing, which is, you know, it's against the law for for an illegal alien, however you define that, or undocumented immigrant, to vote in the first place. And a lot of states have identification requirements when you go to vote, so that's easily determined. But it kind of promotes President Trump's narrative that there's millions, which is untrue, but the millions of immigrants out there trying to vote for Democratic candidates.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org as we continue our discussion with Mark Ballard. Bill Huey writes, Mike Johnson told CNBC in an interview this morning that Joe Biden allowed 80 million illegal immigrants into the country so they could vote for him illegally this fall. This is Bill Huey characterizing the statement from Speaker Johnson. Do you think Speaker Johnson has gone around the bend from all the stress or what? This is from Bill Huey. Johnson, at times, it appears that he is doing everything he can to protect himself from the ire of the right wing of his party, what some might depict as the far right, but he's sticking to this 80 million people. That's a lot of people. We only have 330 some million people in the United States. I don't think 80 million of them are illegal immigrants, Mark.
Well, a couple of things on that is that the 80 million, I don't know where that comes from, but it could be a mathematical extrapolation from the high watermark in December of last year, which we need to note that that surge, that flood of people crossing the border from Mexico into the United States has gone to a trickle. I mean, there's hardly anybody doing it now. The second thing to note is that Johnson has long argued that is the reason why Democrats want immigrants, is so that they could beef up their census numbers so that they can get more of a cut of the federal money, federal aid money, because that's done by population. And the third thing is that Johnson basically agreed to push this legislation in return for Donald Trump, apparently. I mean, they didn't actually say this, but it apparently is in return for Donald Trump supporting him somewhat as Speaker of the House.
80 million people. Now, there is also an assumption that if there were 80 million people or 8 million or whatever number, that they're all going to be voting for Joe Biden. And we know people don't vote monolithically. But at any rate, this is a political PAP, and it's business as usual. And both parties are often egregious in making statements of this kind, but I don't understand why Mike Johnson isn't called on it, and thank goodness for Bill Huey for writing the question, because that is something that should be stated. And if there was massive voter fraud in 2020, and there has been no evidence to affirm that, does that mean that every illegal voter voted for Biden over Trump? So far, most of the people who have been caught voting illegally were Trump backers, not Biden backers, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but it would seem to me incongruous for a person who is illegally in this country to take such a huge gamble, because we're talking about a federal crime here, to add one vote in an election that tallies up tens of millions of votes. So, I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense on my level, and, you know, at least in my limited Louisiana educated mind, it just doesn't seem to make sense. I'll let it go with that.
Okay. Well, it's time for a break, and Mark Ballard, as always, is at the ready. He takes all questions from anybody who's interested, and we will go to the phone lines in short order when we return, and there is an opportunity to get in at 877-217-5757. We're back with more Talk Louisiana after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Mark Ballard, who covers politics for the newspaper of record, the Advocate and Picayune. He's at the ready. Your number again, 877-217-5757. Michael in downtown. Michael, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Jim and Mark, I appreciate all the good talk you give when you're on the radio and everything. I just got a minor complaint. You know, you often make equivalency, remarks about the lies that the Republicans put out versus the Democrats. You know, yeah, you're right. The Democrats, they push their agenda and the spin, but it's not, you don't have court rulings like you had with the Fox thing, showing all the lies that the Republicans put out there and picked up by Fox. I mean, there's no equivalency right now between what Trump and them are saying and what Biden is saying, you know, and I just, you know, wish you wouldn't do it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Does he have a point?
He does
Mark?
Have a good point there. Yeah, he does have a point there. Part of what is going on here is that we want to be fair, and that means turning to the other side and saying, you know, but they say this, you know, and on the other hand, that. And so that does do it. However, he is correct. A lot of what Trump and a lot of what the Republicans say, at least here in Washington, tend to be over the top and at the very least exaggerated.
Well,
but then a lot of politicians here I am going to say the same thing, mm-hmm. to be fair. A lot of politicians tend to over exaggerate.
Well, in truth, the electorate largely doesn't care. As mentioned, Donald Trump, I think, is the biggest fibber in the history of American politics, but as noted, last time in Louisiana, he beat Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. by, it was over 399,000 votes. And if you go to 2016, he beat Hillary Rodham Clinton in Louisiana by 398,000. Hillary actually got 1,000 votes closer to him than Biden, but both routes.
May I point out that it is as a percentage of the overall vote, that I believe that he got about 58%. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's about 58%. And that has been the percentage of Louisiana voters, of Republican candidates in Louisiana, Republican presidential candidates in Louisiana since 2004. George W. Bush in 2000 had about 53% of the vote, and McCain had about 59% of the vote. So the percentage has remained the same, though it is true that Trump is like number one and number three for total number of votes.
Number one and number two. He does spur turnout.
Number three, Bill Cassidy is number two.
Okay. Well, are you okay? Gotcha. But Romney.
In terms of total.
I understand. Yeah. And of course, Cassidy was on the ballot with Trump. So Cassidy benefited from the high turnout that Trump generates. Now, Romney got 57.8% of the votes against Barack Obama in Louisiana. in 2012, and in 2008, McCain got 58.6% of the votes, and Obama got 40%. And if you go back to 2004, George W. Bush got 56.7%, and John Kerry got 42.2%. So the last Democrat to win in Louisiana was Bill Clinton in 1996. It was a three-way race, but Clinton got 52%, 52.01%. Bob Dole got 39.9%, and Ross Perot got 6.9%. So you can see if you added Perot and Dole together, Clinton still won by a rout. But Bill Clinton was a once-in-a-generation politician, and the likes of him will probably not be seen anywhere. But it helped, of course, that he was from neighboring Arkansas, and he was considered a new-type Democrat, and that was shown by the fact that he balanced the budget and left the country with a surplus that since has been squandered. 877-217-5757, Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. I was wondering, I know there's going to be kind of legislation put up just to make political points this year, but I was wondering if there's any actual legislation that would, is kind of has bipartisan support that would actually accomplish something. Thanks.
On Capitol Hill, any bipartisan endeavors?
I mean, yeah, that's such a, it's hard to answer that to decide what is a bipartisan or not. The basically what Johnson was able to do was to push through all of the must-pass bills that needs to. The only thing out there remaining is the FAA reauthorization, which, you know, is basically what allows the planes to fly. And that's going to probably be postponed on Friday into next week, and then they'll come to some sort of agreement on it. And then following that will be the farm bill, which is of vital importance to Louisiana and the rest of the country's agricultural industry. I know that in Baton Rouge and New Orleans that we tend to forget about the fact that there are people that are growing our food and that they rely on the subsidies and supports and incentives that are a part of the farm bill. And that apparently is going to be passed bipartisanly, but they're still kind of hammering out the specifics of that. That'll be later this year as well.
877-217-5757. Thank you, Patricia. James in Metairie. Hello, James. You're on the air. Good morning, sir.
Well, thank you, Jim. Hello, Mark. Something very troubling saw the other day. Mike Johnson had vowed on Tuesday to use all the powers of Congress at his disposal to end all four current criminal prosecutions of the adulterer, Donald Trump. This is thuggish, MAGA Mike behavior. Other than trying to defund the special counsel, Jack Smith, Mark, what can he do? Thank you.
All right.
That is it, basically, that they're going to be pushing legislation. Maybe. I mean, he's just been talking about it so far. We haven't actually seen this. This is something that Marjorie Taylor Greene and Massey and a lot of the insurgents wanted to see, and that is defund the investigations that are working out of the Department of Justice, which would not touch the Georgia case or the New York case, the Stormy Daniels case right now, but it would touch the records case in Florida. It would touch the January 6th case that Jack Smith is doing. But otherwise, there is not really anything that they can be done. It's not really clear yet whether they're going to pursue that legislation. But keep in mind that if President Trump is elected, he could order his attorney general or his rather the attorney general that he appoints can order an end to these investigations.
877-217-5757 for the erudite Mark Ballard. Craig in Natchitoches. Hello, Craig. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yeah, I got an interesting question for y'all. One, if Trump loses and the Dems take back the House and keep the Senate, will the Republicans finally put Donald Trump in the rearview mirror and move on? And also, if Trump is elected, what kind of effect you think would have on the 2028 presidential election?
Well, I'll start on that one. I think if Trump loses, it's going to be close. And my guess is that he will immediately start running for 2028. He'll run a fourth time. And why not? He's 78, or will be 78 in June next month, but June 14th, for those who'd like to send him a birthday present. But I think he'll probably run again, and he'll try to retain control of the Republican Party, and he may very well be successful. But the other alternative is that Biden wins, the Democrats, of course, in 2028, they have a big decision to make. And even if Biden loses, they got a big decision to make about where their party is going. And Mark, I would imagine 2028, let's just say hypothetically Biden does win. 2028, how about a matchup between Donald Trump running for a fourth time against Kamala Harris? What do you make of that one?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's possible. You know, I could also win the lottery in the meantime as well. But it is possible. But I think you're going to also start seeing, from right now, Gavin Newsom is possible as a possible runner. Pete Buttigieg is a possible candidate in the future. Even Mitch Landrieu is a possible candidate in the future. There's a lot of talk about him as well. So I think that it'll be wide open. And I think that that Biden has done already and will continue to do is sort of set up the next group of the next wave of Democratic politicians.
Well, I remember James Carville about a year ago on this show saying, no way, it's going to be Biden and Trump. They're both going to be gone, Jim. They're both going to be gone. Well. My guess is that Donald Trump will be on the ballot in 2028. If he loses this election as a Republican nominee, that's just one person's opinion. But a listener says, would he try to change the Constitution if he won so he could run again, Mark?
Well, I'm pretty sure they could, but I mean, to change the Constitution is a huge step. I mean, unlike in Louisiana, but in the federal Constitution, why there's so few amendments is that it has to take 2/3 votes in both chambers, and then it has to have, I think, 3/4 of the states approving it as well. And so that's going to be very difficult. What I think we're going to see more likely is executive orders and an effort to go, below the cabinet level and to kind of remove bureaucrats who are protected by civil service and make them more political appointees.
And he could try to change the process with executive order, and then it would go to a court, and based on the fact that a lot of his appointees are in place, you never know. But my guess is that Donald Trump, if he wins, he'll be through by 2028, and if he loses, he'll be running again and trying to get the presidency back. We'll talk more with Mark Ballard when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Pleased to have you aboard. And Mark Ballard is with us for a few more moments, and then we're slated to hear from Molly Ryan, who's at the Capitol for WRKF, 877-217-5757. And Mark's column of last week described the waiting game that Louisiana is having regarding its congressional districts for 2024. And right now, with the election inside 6 months, we don't know where we are. And Mark, Louisiana's 6 U.S. House members, as you noted in a story in today's paper, are still unaware of the shape of the districts they'll run in this fall, but that should be clarified within a month, according to an order promulgated Tuesday by a panel of 3 federal judges overseeing the complex dispute. How are we looking right now?
Well, it's very complex and muddied, and keep that in mind. There are appeals that are going to be filed to the Supreme Court asking for the Supreme Court to get involved and to make those decisions. But in the meantime, the 3 judge panel that was selected by the Chief Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals judge. They set deadlines for each of the parties, and I mean there's legions of these parties to put out their own map. They've you know, and then deadlines for the responses, and then they're going to hold the hearing in Lafayette at the end of the month. And they gave the legislature until June 3rd, when the legislature is adjourning sine die anyway, to come up with their own map. And then they said on June 4th, we're going to decide. They come up with an interim map that will be used in the meantime, at which point I think the Supreme Court will then weigh in and make a decision on it. So that's clear as mud, is it not?
Yeah. Well, we shall see. James in Longview, Texas. James, good morning.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to pose a hypothetical to you, and heaven forbid it ever happens. Just suppose that one or both candidates for president are temporarily incapacitated by, say, a mild stroke or whatever. Would there be such a thing as a sympathy vote?
That's my drift. Yeah, well, let's hope that both candidates are hale and hearty. Let's hope that that's the case. And as far as I know, they're both in reasonably good health. And for their ages, I would say exceptionally good health. But it is true that today, since we've been talking about the border, that Governor Jeff Landry is headed for our southern border with Brigadier General Thomas Frelew. He'll overview Operation Lone Star and meet with Louisiana soldiers, Mark.
The border is a gift for the Republicans to keep on giving. And up here you have Larry Hogan, who in Louisiana was a Republican governor of Maryland, but in Louisiana would be considered, you know, a near communist, socialist Democrat. But he is, pictures of him on the border and wanting to build the wall and the whole thing. That is a major issue that has ignited a lot of the voters in America. And the Republicans, despite the fact that there's not that many people crossing the border right now, that are just going to pound on for this presidential election year.
Well, and Jeff Landry is a pretty good politician. He is headed for the border, and polls in your newspaper conducted by one of the best, Ron Fauché, show that the governor at this point is doing well with the electorate.
He is, and that's what those polls seem to indicate, that the people are liking the way he's going and liking a lot of the issues that he has focused on, crime and education. And the only one that apparently that there's a lot of question over is insurance, but as you recall, that Governor Landry has punted that to the new insurance commissioner, Tim Temple.
Well, in the listener notes, when we were talking about the 58%, and Mark made a good point that seems to be where just about any Republican presidential candidate goes in Louisiana, 58%, which is what Trump received. But when you think about it, the electorate in Louisiana, about two-thirds, about 67% of the electorate identifies as white, the rest black, a few Asians, and a few who just don't say, but at any rate, let's say it's 67% white, and that may be a high number. When you factor in other races, let's knock it down to, say, 64% of the overall electorate as white, and Trump got 58% twice. Well, that would mean he gets very few votes from people of other races. So of the remaining 36, let's give him 10% of that. Let's give him 4%. So that would mean he got 54 of the 64%, 54 out of 64, who are identified as white. Mark, that is 84.375%. He is overwhelmingly popular with white voters in Louisiana. And it is an amazing phenomenon, because as we know, he does have some baggage.
Yeah, I can't vouch for your numbers. I learned my math at Louisiana public school system, so I'll trust that you're correct on that. But what we do know about it is that he does have overwhelming support among white, and when he won those last two elections in Louisiana, that he won, I think, 55 out of 64 parishes. And in about 17 of those parishes, and they were all predominantly, overwhelmingly white rural parishes in North Louisiana and Acadiana, that he polled over 75% in those particular parishes. And across the nation, what we mm-hmm. found is that one of his strongest, or his base basically, are white males in blue-collar professions who kind of feel like the government has passed them by. And that they want to have more of a voice, and that seems to be mm-hmm. what's doing it. And he has a very high percentage of those particular voters.
Well, thank you, Mark Ballard. Always an honor and pleasure to talk with you. We'll call again next week. We're joined now by Molly Ryan, and sometimes my math is worthy of review. And Jim Brandt, one of my good friends, a former head of PAR, he has advised me that the 86,000 residents who are now in St. George are all, and I think he's right, from unincorporated areas. So that will not affect the 220,000 of those, including me and my homes in Baton Rouge. I'm still a Baton Rougean, but 86,000 makes St. George, as of now, about the fifth largest city in the state. We're joined now by Molly Ryan, who's been covering the Capitol. And the Louisiana House voted overwhelmingly, 75-27 Tuesday, to call a constitutional convention to overhaul the state's 50-year-old constitution. Molly, this is a big vote for the governor. What do you think?
Yeah, it was absolutely a big vote for the governor. Governor Landry was actually in the House chamber on Tuesday, on the side of the chamber, watching the debate and watching the vote and meeting with some lawmakers, and it was said he met with lawmakers who were skeptical about the proposal for the convention ahead of that debate on the House floor and ahead of the vote. But it's a big change, or a big win for him, but it didn't come without some changes to the proposal. The biggest one being that the full House voted to change the start date of the convention from May 20th to August 1st. So now it would run from August 1st to August 15th instead of in a couple of weeks, which would have been May 20th, and would have overlapped with the regular session, which is not set to end until June 3rd. And I think a lot of lawmakers had an issue with just how quickly that was coming up and how it overlapped with the regular session. So they changed it to August, but they could meet as early as May 30th and a sort of organizational session where they could pick leaders, really set guidelines, set up the structure, set up committees, and then those committees could meet throughout the summer in June and July to discuss potential changes.
And, of course, this is now being reviewed by the Senate, and Cameron Henry and others in the Senate have been bigger thorns in the side of the governor on occasion, Cameron Henry in particular.
Yes, they have been a lot more skeptical about this proposal to have a constitutional convention. I do think the new timeline will ease a lot of lawmakers in the Senate. It will ease their minds a bit, but I think they're also going to want to know more of exactly what Landry wants to change in the Constitution or remove from the Constitution before they're going to vote on a convention. It's still really unclear exactly what he wants to do. We know they want to free up spending ahead of an expected budget shortfall next year, but nobody has really said exactly what they will change or remove. The full House did vote to protect some items like the homestead exemption and the state school funding formula.
Okay, let's go to Dan downtown. We are short on time, but I know Dan's been waiting. We're going to slide you in before we part company. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Is Governor Landry's push for a state constitutional convention a takeoff on right-wing extremist Mark Levin's persistent promotion for such a convention at the national level?
All right. Does Governor Landry, we've got about 10 seconds, does he follow national politics? Do they influence him at all, Molly, based on what you've seen?
I think he follows national politics some, but I don't know that has much to do with this constitutional convention.
Well, thank you so much. Let's keep it going with Molly Ryan doing great work covering the Capitol for WRKF and for WWNO. Until tomorrow, for Robin Dow, thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.